This is the Senate Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources for May 5th, 1989. Senator Gary George, Chair.
Welcome to the Senate Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources. It's May the 3rd. And what I'd like to do right now, we have two bills that were to come before the committee that had problems with the language in the amendment. And so, Brad, would you tell us exactly where we are on those?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 940, exempting glass container manufacturers. And Senate Bill 12, establishing property for protection. That's in order to make the
What I'd like to do now is to open the work session on SB 12. Close the work session on Senate Bill 12 and open the work session on SJR 38.
You have those in front of you, those are the dash one. It takes it from a 21 member task force down to a 14 member. There will be seven senators and representatives. Within the findings on pages 1 and 2 of the bill. On page 1, lines 4 through 8 have been deleted. 11 and 12 have been deleted. Oh, I might add, everywhere where migrant is found in the resolution, migrant farm workers, migrant has been deleted, and the references are only to farm workers. On line 15, attempts to enforce housing standards have created was deleted, there is was inserted, so the sentence reads, whereas although some grower-provided housing does exist, there is a trend towards agricultural growers discontinuing the provision of housing for farm workers. Lines 18 and 19 were deleted and language was inserted that reads now, whereas a result of diminished agricultural grower provision of housing, there is increased pressure on other housing resources. Lines 22 to 24 were deleted. Lines 27 and 28 were deleted. Lines 15 through 18 were deleted on page 2. Also on page 2 up above, starting on line 3, there was changing those language there was changed to say there exists a need to examine the housing availability and condition for farm workers in the state. On page 5, on line 4 and 5, that sentence was changed to read farm worker communities and agricultural growers in the state are in need of assistance in organizing a forum to address issues of common concern. And then finally on page 3, and this has been noted by the original sponsors of the bill as being a source of controversy, the line 10 on page 3, it had read, migrant farm worker housing interim task force shall require the approval of a majority of the members of the task force. That's been changed to the consensus of the members of the task force.
Okay. Well, can we get a consensus on consensus?
Is that a rhetorical question?
John McCulley and Tim Bernafik, could you speak before? And speak to the Dash 1 Amendment.
Welcome. State your name for the record. I'll let you close the time. He's going to go first.
Mr. Chair, committee members, I'm John McCulley representing the tree fruit growers. Here to speak on the Dash 1 Amendment to SJR 38. Tim and I had worked together on this language after the last hearing. If you'll recall, we both expressed some concerns about the resolution, stating we thought it was a good idea and something that should happen, but we were concerned about the composition of the task force. After listening to committee discussion, we tried to incorporate some of the concerns that we have with what we heard members of the committee express in creating the Dash 1 amendments that are before you. We still believe, and we understand that the proponents of the bill, the requesters of the bill, do not support the Dash 1 amendments. I suppose you will hear directly from them, but it has been relayed to us that they don't support these amendments. This obviously is not something that we're going to die for, but we think that the Dash 1 amendments, from our standpoint, are a workable solution. What we tried to do was honestly take some what we considered inflammatory language out of the resolution, part of the resolution, just state facts as much as possible, and then seek a smaller task force that's composed of people who are actually involved in development of housing. The first recommendation that we have is that it encompass all housing, that it not just address migrant housing, that it would be year-round worker housing as well as seasonal farm worker housing. We recommended the task force to be appointed, as I say, include those people who are most directly involved or affected, and those who would be involved in arriving at any solutions to solve the problems that are stated in the preamble to the bill. We did, as we have testified, recommend consensus approach. This is obviously a contentious area, so that if it were, for example, to go by a majority of the task force, we think that dilutes the effectiveness of the task force's recommendations to you, because what will happen is that the contention in the task force that produced that majority will then be carried over to the recommendations coming to the legislature, so the battles will be fought all over again right here. We have had the opportunity to work on various task forces on controversial issues where consensus is the approach that is taken. And when people of goodwill are working together to find solutions, we believe that consensus is very workable and produces a much better product if there are recommendations that are going to be coming to the legislature. Those are the changes that we recommend. I guess leave it in the committee's hands. If the committee's desire is to go ahead with the task force, we think it can be very workable and very solution-oriented, and we think it might be a good idea. But again, it's not our bill, so it's up to the committee and how they wish to proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tim Bernafik, Associate Director of Governmental Affairs for the Oregon Farm Bureau. I think John pretty much stated it and put it well. I guess one thing I would add is just to go through again the list of who this task force will be comprised of. And again, it's 14 members rather than 21, and that was a suggestion that we took from the committee. I think Senator Farioli and I believe Chair George thought that the committee was a little bloated as it was originally written. And we decided to pare it down and put people in place that are actually on the ground level working and have an understanding of what it takes to get this housing built. That's why we've got folks like builders and county planners and community housing development representatives. We've got a worker, a farmer, and a representative from the Department of Consumer and Business Services. So, again, we're trying to orient a group that has working knowledge down on the bottom level to actually get some constructive things done and have those recommendations be contained in the recommendations forward. So, with that, I'll conclude.
I just want to add one thing. As the committee staff was summarizing the amendments, I think I heard mention of DCBS being represented by building codes. Our intention was that be or OSHA, actually, because or OSHA inspects the seasonal farm worker housing, and we believe that they would offer significant input to the task force.
Okay. There was some eyebrows raised about the issue of consensus. John, you already spoke. Change of the makeup, a little bit more balance. Do you think that it is necessary to change that word of consensus? If we get a definition, because I understand that when you look it up, we find two definitions for what consensus.
Chair George, member of the committee, again, Tim Bernasek, Farm Bureau. I guess we do feel strongly. John, I guess, more involved than I was this last interim with a committee that was organized through the Bureau of Labor and Industries to deal with farm labor issues. And in fact, Senate Bill 980 was a result of that committee work dealing with farm labor contractor licensing. You heard that bill last week. And that committee was a consensus-oriented, consensus-driven committee. And while there were some issues that were not able to be resolved in that committee, and we've all kind of gone our separate ways working it, I think that it shows that when consensus is driving everybody, if we have a common interest, which we certainly do in this housing, there's no need for a majority, minority. Let's make sure these recommendations take in account every interest from the worker to the grower to the builder to the planner. It just seems like I don't understand where the contention would be and why we would not want to go consensus.
Have you folks stand by for just a little bit? We'll get the senator to come up here.
Senator Consensus.
Hello. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate you calling me up. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Susan Castillo, State Senator from Eugene, District 20. I have some concerns about the amendments to this bill. Seems like usually when you're bringing together a task force that asks folks from all the different viewpoints on an issue to come together and work on a common problem, usually everyone's excited about the task force being formed and they have high hopes that they're going to be able to accomplish something. But with the changes before you, I'm hearing part of the people involved in this issue saying, oh no, it's better that we not even move forward on this task force if this is what it's going to look like. So I have concerns about that. And for that reason, I am listed as one of the co-chairs on the bill. I'm hearing folks say they'd rather not even move forward on this bill than have it go this direction. So I just have some concerns about that, and I wanted to share those with you. The consensus issue, I think at times that works. I don't know that it'll work for this group, but I'm not against requiring task force to work on consensus. I know there is a concern by some of the advocates for farm workers about having to work on that because this is such a difficult issue, and at times the sides on this issue are so far apart that they do worry that anything would be accomplished if consensus has to be the way that this task force would work. So just wanted to express those concerns, Mr. Chair, and would just like to ask you to please consider the concerns of some of the, one of the concerns is that the legal advocates for the farm workers, I understand, is no longer, according to the amendments, would be a part of the task force. And the union that represents farm workers would not have a representative on there, and some other changes that people have some concerns about. So wanted to make sure that you were aware of all of those, although I'm sure other people came up and also talked with you about those. So thank you.
Obviously, you folks brought this forward because you believe there was a problem, Senator. And to me, when I look at this, I think, okay, there might be a little bit of a change, but it seems rather fair and balanced to me. And you're trying to accomplish the same goal. What would be? I know the fiscal would probably come down too, which is a concern to some. Have you seen this?
I have not seen the fiscal on it. No.
Okay. And if it was changed to a majority with a minority report or something like that, would that would didn't intend to do that, but
well, I'm wondering about whether we need legislation to accomplish this. I'm just wondering if maybe going to the governor's office, if the governor's office could perhaps put together a task force to work on farm worker housing and would not have this kind of a fiscal attached to it. I'm just wondering if, you know, that would be a better way to deal with the budgetary issue here and putting together a task force on this. So I'm just kind of thinking that maybe that's a route we could go where we don't have to do this through legislation.
Senator Zeus?
What if we were to go to a majority vote, and it's unusual to have even numbered groups anyway, and this the amendment has it a 14th. If we took it to a 15th, or a legal person, either one. Somebody's choice. I don't know which would be the best. And that's only one more person that's not, from the way this is laid out, not likely to skew anything, I don't think. Which would give the senator, you know, closer to what she had originally wanted. And I wouldn't go with consensus. I mean, my experience, something like this, when they're dealing with controversial things and you make everybody agree, you don't get much.
You don't. I think it would work better if it was a majority.
A majority vote and maybe by adding a union person or a legal person in there from the farm workers.
Thank you. As was pointed out on line 14, page 2, the recommendation was to remove DCBS and put in FORS and OSHA, which I would very much agree with. I think building houses is...
I could, Mr. Chair, could I ask him to join me? He was one of the people involved in working on this bill with Senator Courtney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, for the record, Bob Castagna, representing the Oregon Catholic Conference. I circulated the proposal that we received from the agricultural representative to the requesters of the bill. And because of the consensus requirement and because of the fact that various community groups that were originally included in the printed version of the bill were deleted in the amendment, the reaction of those organizations requesting the bill was that they preferred to walk away from the bill because it would be a year's worth of work and effort that people would put in good faith working on this project. And when I spoke to the agricultural representatives as to their definition or understanding of consensus, it was unanimity. And again, in speaking to those representatives today, they reiterated to me that consensus was an absolute requirement for them to go forward in this effort. And I think people realize that this is a difficult issue area and that to invest a year's worth of work and effort when one member of the task force could jettison any substantive recommendation, people are not willing to invest that time, energy, and effort in that sort of an endeavor. So they'd rather walk away from the bill.
First, if you were to add the additional person, whether it be a union rep or a something. But then also on line 11, sub D, the one individual representing community health and development organizations or service providers, that, I mean, you could expand that to some of the ones that were deleted. Under that, I would include the religious or charitable, and
is that I think a fairly balanced approach here.
That's true.
Senator Parkland?
You know, I got to say, I mean, everybody's pussyfooting around this thing, but the fact of the matter is, you know, this bill was put together and sponsored by some very impressive people on here, and I mean impressive in terms of the kind of diversity that you see sponsoring this bill. I mean, you have Senator Castillo, who's obviously a hero of the farm workers, but you also have Senator Lynn and Senator Starr. You have Representative Close, you have Representative Manick, you have Representative Witt, Representative Starr, and then you have, at the request of some very, very impressive folks, the St. Pius X Catholic Church, Oregon Catholic Conference, CASA, Oregon Law Center, Association of Community Development Organizations. My sense is, let's move this bill on the merit of it. If the other folks want to come in, don't cut and stuff this one. Just create your own bill. Let somebody else use a priority bill and bring something forward, and you can have your shot at a task force too. But there's no sense in trying to gut and stuff something that is a product of a lot of work. And, you know, I just think that to fiddle around with, well, maybe if we just change this and change that, these people, they worked hard to create this and to get the buy-in of some, again, there's a heck of a lot of diversity in the sponsorship of this bill, and I think it's disrespectful to the folks that requested this and to the senators and representatives that signed it to gut and stuff something like this.
Hmm. Senator, we've had good lists on bills that you proposed that were just as outstanding as this group, so I'm going to take that if I in balance. Senator Wilde.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. After that little to do, it's our job to look at this and decide what we think is best. That's why we're a committee, and I wouldn't care if Pope Paul were on here. I would go and I would do what I think is correct. And for anyone to suggest that this list up here indicates whether we should touch it or not is garbage.
Well, you can have the disrespect you want to have, Senator. That's fine. That's your own prerogative. If we had a bunch of well-meaning people on this thing, then we probably would have solved the farm worker crisis a long time ago. You know, if you want to create a bill, create a bill. You may have some priority bills left. I don't know.
Yeah. If I could get your attention, Senator Dews.
Senator Castillo, are you familiar with the fiscal?
I just got a look at it here, and that's why I'm wondering if we need to do this through legislation. I'm wondering if we had a governor's task force put together, if that would be a less expensive way to go than go this route. I don't know.
Spend somebody else's money.
Exactly.
I was just wondering, the original bill is a 21-member task force. Are you committed to 21 members? I mean, I'm not going to try to second-guess you. I assume that all those people are in there for some very good reasons. But given the fiscal, I was just wondering if it was possible to scale it down, which is one thing the Dash Ones do. Whether they scale it down in the right way or the wrong way, they do scale it down.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dukes, I'm wondering why we need the builder on here. We have expert people who have been involved in these in farm worker housing projects, and I don't understand why on the amendments we would replace someone like either a legal representative for farm workers or a union representative for a builder. I'd rather that, I'm sure a builder would have some great input on this, but I think that in terms of what the purpose of the task force is about and the needs of farm workers, I don't know that, I think that the other two people would fit in better than having the builder here on the list. And so I guess we just have some concerns about who has been replaced here from the original bill and how... the goal is to just put together a group of people who are going to be helpful to trying to solve this very important issue. And Senator George, I know you as a farmer, you know about this issue. It is very serious.
Mm-hmm.
And we really do need to address this. And it would be great if we could arrive at a bill that everyone would be happy with on this, on who's going to be on the task force to work on this issue.
Senator, could I get you to do this? Could you go to the governor's office and show him the fiscal and say, do you have any suggestions how we might proceed, and then get back to us?
Okay.
And we've been writing little notes to the good Senate president, so we could probably write another one on this.
Okay.
And get back with me as soon as you can.
I will. So. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. Thank you very much. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and close the work session on Senate Joint Resolution 38. And I'm going to open up a work session on Senate Bill 1267.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1267 removes the requirement that hard labor contractors give worker a written statement and execute written agreement on terms and conditions of employment under certain circumstances. Prohibits the Commissioner of Bureau of Labor and Industry from serving civil penalty for farm labor contractors' failure to give written statement and execute written agreement unless Commissioner finds that worker was harmed thereby. And Senator, Mr. Chair, we heard testimony on this bill on April 28th, and we brought it back so that we could get some -2 amendments. These are drafted by John McCauley and Tom Nelson, and the essence of them are found on page 2 and page 3. And they would exempt from the definition of farm labor contractor an individual who recruits, supplies, solicits, or employs temporary non-immigrant alien workers who are authorized to work in agricultural employment in the U.S. under the applicable federal statute. And it would also exempt from the definition of farm labor contractor an individual who recruits, supplies, solicits, or employs domestic workers while fulfilling the requirements of a petition made under that same applicable federal statute, which is 8 U.S.C. 1101, sub A, sub 15, sub capital H, sub double italicized I, sub lowercase a. And we spoke before the committee, Mr. Chair.
Right.
There were a number of people who wanted to testify both in opposition to or in favor of those -2 amendments, and you said you would present a brief opportunity to do
I certainly
that.
Will. It's a little bit unusual in a work session, but we didn't realize we'd have such controversy. Let's bring up one from each group, and we'll just do it that way. If you could, why don't you go ahead and call them?
To begin, let's start with John McCauley then and Tom Nelson, who, if my understanding, work together to draft the -2 amendments.
Mr. Chair, committee members, John McCauley, representing Tree Fruit Growers. We had appeared before you last week on amendments to Senate Bill 1257. At that point, the bill was still being considered by the committee, and at the hearing last week, the committee determined that the bill was not needed. So the -2 amendments that you have before you replace the language originally in Senate Bill 1267 with the amendments. The amendments do, as committee staff outlined, say that if a person or an individual is involved in the federal H-2A program to bring legal workers into the state, that they do not also have to be licensed as a farm labor contractor. And we bring this issue because we think that requiring, after you hear what the federal program requires, also requiring a state farm labor contractor's license is kind of excessive regulation. And I will let Mr. Nelson explain the federal H-2A program and why we believe that an Oregon farm labor contractor's license also is not necessary.
Yes, Senator Joe.
Do we in Oregon have the right to enforce under the federal law? And if they don't have
sure.
a state license, the license is federal, and Saboli gets a complaint that they're doing something wrong, does the state of Oregon have the right to do any enforcement
It would be my understanding, I'll let Mr. Nelson correct me or someone else, but I don't think so. I think it would be the federal enforcement that would come to bear on that.
The Department of Labor would have jurisdiction over it.
Department of Labor.
Department of Labor.
Well, that'll get us a result real soon. Okay.
But any of the other, Mr. Chair, Senator Duke, any of the other requirements that are both state and federal requirements, the state would have enforcement. Field sanitation, farm labor housing, those types of areas where there are state requirements, the state would have enforcement in those areas.
One thing that came up. Requirement to go through. The federal license that they and that would allow for state.
Yeah, my name is Tom Nelson. I'm the executive director of the Hood River Grower Shipper Association, and growers are in our area are very interested in having a legal workforce. They're very concerned about their labor needs. The HQA program has been around a long time. 25,000 workers were brought in last year, primarily on the East Coast. On the West Coast, we've never really used the HQA program. Some sheep herders do, and in Idaho they do for changing irrigation pipes. Because of concerns over the dwindling labor supply as well as nervousness over the legality of our workforce, this is another alternative to bring workers in. And in order to make it operate efficiently, it is our suggestion that we not have two sets of rules over the same program. The H-2A is a federal program run by the Department of Labor, and I have a little handout that kind of shows the protections of each one. H-2A is more protective of farm workers than the Oregon Farm Labor Contractor rules, and I know last time I was here I was asked about the return transportation, and last time I'm not sure if I said anything or not at all, but if you complete 50% of the work contract, the grower will reimburse you your inbound travel, and if you complete 100% of the work contract, the grower will then pay you your money for your going back home money. So the farmer does end up paying inbound and outbound transportation costs in the program. That was clarification from last time. On the rules and regulations, I'm sure working through Department of Labor and Bureau of Labor and Industries, if some organization finds out there are some problems, be it through the worker advocate groups, the church groups, or whatever, this just like Oregon law, there are phone numbers one can call and report it, or opportunities for legal action. So you're not dealing with a workforce that is insulated or a workforce that does not have protection.
Okay, thank you, too. Brad, any questions? Sure, let's do that. We can bring up another chair. First of all, we'll have one person take a seat over here on our right to their left.
Larry. Gentlemen, please.
I ask each the three of you to, four of you, to determine who will go first and state your name for the record and then proceed when you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your indulgence in allowing us to some time to testify. We didn't really have much chance to testify last time because of the new amendment. I won't try to repeat what I said last time, or I'll try, to the contrary, I'll try not to repeat what I said last time, but I would like to put this in some framework. Under current law, anyone who contracts workers to come to Oregon, whether they're contracted out of the state or they're contracted into the state, where that person receives a fee for recruiting those workers, and those workers are going to work in agriculture for someone else, you're required to have a license. That's important because to begin with, to get a license, you have to show character, competence, and reliability sufficient to meet BOLI standards. You have to take an exam that tells BOLI that you know the business and you know your responsibilities well enough to be able to comply with them. You have to post a bond, and the bond guarantees payment of wages. You have to be sure that if you recruit people early, they have a place to live and that they have food. You have to be sure if they're working in a field that there are field sanitation facilities that comply with Oregon law. If you provide housing, you have to be sure that that housing complies with the law. At the time of recruitment, you're supposed to give a disclosure statement, and we heard all about disclosure statements last week, so I won't bore you with that, except that we do view that as being a very significant element of protection for farm workers. Now, all of those things are enforceable in Oregon by Oregon courts and by BOLI. The federal requirements that have been referred to are not so enforceable. They're not, first of all, they're not generally enforceable through the courts at all. They're not enforceable by BOLI. The only enforcement is with the Department of Labor. Even under existing law, the history of H-2 in areas where it's been used has been a sad story of broken promises and abuse. It's been a terrible system that it just has not been one that's worked well for workers at all. That's under existing law. I have to say that it's a little bit disingenuous for the proponents of this legislation to say that you needn't worry about minimum work standards because of the federal standards under the H-2A program, because these same organizations are working around the clock in Washington to repeal those very same worker protections. There's a bill that passed the Senate.
Michael, would you say that again? Who's trying to repeal the worker protections?
Agricultural associations, including the Farm Bureau and including the Hood River Growers Shippers Association.
And then they're trying to modify some of the requirements?
To modify the H-2A program requirements to eliminate many of the same protections that are on Mr. Nelson's list. So this legislature can't take much comfort in those lists of protections because they may not exist next year. In fact, there was a bill that passed the United States Senate that would have repealed many of these requirements last time, and it died before at the end of the Congress and wasn't enacted.
Right, let me ask you a question. If, in fact, we passed this bill and then these requirements were eliminated, there would basically be nothing out there.
That's correct. And so we believe that it is fair and appropriate to have Oregon regulate its own workplace. We're not asking anything that doesn't apply to any other farm labor contractor. We ought not to provide an incentive for people to avoid employing U.S. workers. We want these jobs to go to U.S. workers if they're available to do them, and we ought not to say, well, you can get out from under farm labor contractor registration if you apply for H-2A foreign workers. But if you only use U.S. workers, then you have to comply with Oregon law. That would seem to me to be a bad message for this legislature to send. It also ought not to be the case that we discriminate against foreign workers that come into this country and not provide the protections of Oregon law to them. That probably would violate the NAFTA labor side agreement, and Consul Alvarado is here, and you could maybe direct questions directly to him about that, but it's my understanding that that would constitute unlawful discrimination against foreign workers to have protections for one class of workers but not for foreign workers. In addition, U.S. workers contracted by labor contractors who were working to fill an H-2A order. See, under H-2A application, the first thing you do is you say, I need 200 workers. And the first thing you do is you go out and you try to recruit U.S. workers, and U.S. workers are supposed to have the preference. Only if you can't fill the jobs locally, then do you go into the foreign labor pool. as this bill is drafted, as the dash two amendments are drafted, the recruiter of U.S. workers to fill those 100 jobs would also be exempt from any regulation under the state. And it doesn't seem to me that there's any compelling reason for that. Our law works. It works well. There's just no reason. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. And with that, I'll indulge no further upon your time. Thank you very much. Unless you have questions.
For the record, Bob Castagna, Oregon Catholic Conference. In 1989, the Oregon Catholic Conference was a participant in the Farm Worker Lobby Coalition getting contractor obligations passed in state law. As you may recall, in the spring of 1988, we had a wet and cold winter and spring, and the harvest was delayed, and there were many migrant workers who came to Oregon who did not have housing, who did not have food, etc., and many of them wound up on church doorsteps looking for housing, for food, etc. One of the obligations we put in the law for farm labor contractors was to provide both food and housing if they brought workers here before the crop was ready. And it's my understanding that this obligation of providing the free food would be obliterated with this amendment. And then they wind up back on the church doorsteps in potentially overwhelming numbers, as we found in that spring of 1988, and then we're left trying to provide for these people when really we believe it's the moral and should be the legal obligation of the contractors to provide free food and housing for these workers whom they brought here to Oregon in advance of the crops being ready to pick. I mean, it places us in a very difficult position.
Yes, good afternoon. My name is Jose Luis Alvarado. I'm the Deputy Consul General for the State of Oregon, Consul General of Mexico.
Welcome.
Thank you very much. The reason I'm here is that we like to express a serious concern of a possible approval of a bill like this. This bill, if it's approved, will completely exempt all the farm labor contractors of some obligations, and we all know that although there are some good people who's willing to cooperate, willing to work on this issue, we still have a lot of problems with our farm workers. So if we approve, if the Oregon State approves a law like this, a bill like this, we will be in serious contradiction of the spirit of cooperation that we have had with the United States government in the past 5 years. And one of those agreements is precisely what Mr. Dale was telling you about, is the Master Site Agreement for Labor issues for labor rights, which completely says that we have to have equal rights for all workers, not only Oregon workers, Canadian workers, but all workers who come to this country to work. So if you decide to approve a bill like this, I mean, I am afraid to tell you that you will be violating some federal rights and rights and agreements that have been signed by your government and mine in this spirit of cooperation. So once again, I just like you to know that we will be just working very closely with all of you, if you want, with organizations such as Mr. Adele, and in trying to protect the rights of all Mexican nationals who come to Oregon. And of course, as you may know, 95% of Oregon farm workers come from my country, so we will be working very closely to see this. And obviously, if it's necessary, we will go to Governor's Federal Office to see what we can do, because this will be violating some labor rights that this agreement gives to all workers in the United States, not only in Oregon.
I think you're going to find a unanimous consent among this group that we have no intention of doing that. One question, could you help me, though? When it comes to the H-2A program, in other states, do they still maintain the double, do they still have the federal requirements under H-2A and then also maintain the state program?
Yes, because the main purpose is to protect the workers. And somebody here says that there is excessive law. I think nothing is excessive if we want to have equal treatment for all workers. I mean, that would be, as Mr. Dell was saying, discriminated and unfair. So I think nothing will be excessive. The main reason is to protect all workers, not only Mexicans, but all workers. And yet, there are other states who are using the federal law and the state law to protect the rights of workers.
Okay, great. Could I keep you guys right here for a minute? Tom Nelson, could you come up and let's talk about some of the issues here? We'll have you pick up that other mic over there. Because I think we need to get this clear, at least in the chair's mind, as to where we are in relationship to federal law and protection of workers. What I'll do is, Tom, I'll go ahead and ask you to speak to some things that have been said, and then we'll keep it friendly, and we'll be, you guys will come through me, but we'll let's go ahead and just dialogue this thing right now, if the committee doesn't mind. Okay, without objection.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the H-2A program, the program that Senator Wyden and Senator Gordon Smith have been working on, it does not remove protections for the workers. I'm not aware of any of those protections being removed. It does adjust some of them and look at them a little differently, but in the comparison sheets I have seen, and including the one that I passed out to you today, I do not know of any of those protections that go away in the legislation that's been worked on. I might also add on that legislation, it's interesting to chase a smoking gun, but I think that bill has the same problem with President Clinton that a lot of legislation here might have with Governor Kitthoffer. You can get it through the House and Senate, but may not fly, may not have wings. So I am not aware of where the information in those comments came from.
One question, and I'll ask these folks to address that. In the Dash 2 amendment, is this language that would make this bill similar to other states? Because the assertion is that we're setting up something that's completely different than H-2A programs in other states.
This, Mr. Chair, this language, the H part, comes right out of the federal code as far as defining what the program is. There are states, every state's a little bit different, and some states have their own farm labor contractors like Oregon. Other states rely on the federal farm labor contractor. And if Oregon had federal farm labor contractor law only, they are exempt from H-2A. They would not need to register. There are states that are just the feds, and the people operating the H-2A program do not register with the feds and are not required to. So Oregon's is what triggers. Oregon's farm labor contractor rules go a little further than the federal ones.
Thank you. Chair, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Larry Kleinman. I'm Secretary-Treasurer of Pineros y Campesinos Unidos del Noroeste, Northwest Tree Planters and Farm Workers United, also known as PECUN. We're a farm worker union in Oregon based in Woodburn. I'll be very brief because many of the points I intended to make have been made by prior speakers. But I just want to point out that we are, as earlier speakers mentioned, there is not a level playing field for farm workers in the state. We believe that field is tilted against farm worker interest in many cases, and that as a practical matter, H-2A workers come in some form of servitude, meaning that their status in the United States is dependent on their employment. If they quit their employment, they're deportable. They can be sought out and deported. In addition to the already disparate power relationship that exists.
Okay, one second. You're talking about the H-2A.
That's right.
Okay, if they lose a job, they can be deported.
That's right. They're out of status, they're deportable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Might point out that I don't believe under the H-2O status that a worker can choose for whom to work either. I think they have to work for the H-2O H-2A contractor, which is definitely a difference that even is alluded to in Mr. Nelson's testimony.
Absolutely. On the second page, down about two-thirds of the way down, it refers to worker can work for anyone, and it does not allow that under this. But the difference is they have a strong written agreement in place beforehand.
Now, there's nothing that this body here today or this state legislature can do about that. That's a federal matter. But I don't think it's a step in the right direction, given that that reality in our experience as a practical matter creates a climate of fear among workers, or intensifies a climate of fear that may already exist. That not only are they risking whatever other possible consequences for speaking out about possible violations, which include eviction, firing from a job, but also deportation. So we also know from our practical experience that there is an under-enforcement of violations of law. So I think it's a bad public policy move. I think it's a bad practical move for this legislature to be rolling back the meager protections that exist under state law that the state legislature had the wisdom to enact in addition to the federal law. There was good public policy reason for doing that when it was done. That still exists today. This is a step in the wrong direction. And thank you for your time and allowing us to testify under these unusual circumstances.
Thank you very much, Senator Fisher.
It was justified to the other states rely solely on the federal government in this program and problems they have in those states.
Well, Senator Fisher, I'm not. I can't give you chapter and verse about the conditions in those states. I'm not personally familiar with them. But what I can say is even with Oregon's additional requirements, there are still many problems, as the consul pointed out, and as all of us that are familiar day-to-day with who interact with farm workers know, that there are problems that still have not been adequately solved, and there are many violations not adequately addressed for a number of reasons, not only because of an impossible inadequacy in state enforcement activity, but in workers basically being reluctant to come forward and not having adequate protections against retaliation. We've been a part of drafting a bill, a different bill, in a different committee that would address some of those matters, but I think it bespeaks the fact that that's the reality that we see. And so there may be fewer problems or more problems in other states that may or may not be related to this construct, but here in Oregon, that's the situation we're facing. Mr. Chair.
Senator
Porter. I think since we are talking about the interface of state and federal policy, it might not hurt to have, I think Mr. Tiffany's here from Bowie, it might be helpful to have his perspective as well. I wonder if we could call him up to this. There's an extra mic over here. Get some input from him on.
Well.
Why don't you pull up the mic? Now he works for Jack Roberts. I don't whisper nothing in his ears.
Go ahead and state your name for the record and tell us a little bit about what you think of this discussion we have going on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Paul Tiffany. I'm the Government Relations Manager for the Bureau of Labor and Industry. Commissioner Roberts is aware of the Dash 2 amendments. We discussed it. He is unable to be here this evening. But I'm instructed to tell you that he's leaning against supporting the amendment primarily because you don't feel that there has been a situation, the situation simply hasn't been justified in his mind that an exemption such as this is necessary. We are continuing to research the issues involved, but at this point, we simply haven't reached a conclusion that it's necessary at this point.
Would it be possible that under current law and with administrative rule power that your agency has to allow a grower or an association to set it up an H2A process and actually bring workers in today?
We couldn't, Mr. Chairman, no, we couldn't exempt a worker, a contractor for that kind of reason. The only way we could, we have a series of exemptions that we have set up by administrative rule, but those are only because we're able to interpret the vague meaning of some terms in the statute, but we couldn't do that with this study.
Mr. Chair, if I may, yes. there is another,
I'm
sorry, Michael Dale from the Oregon Law Center for the record. There is a bill that's working its way through the legislature. It should be on the Senate floor soon. Senate Bill 980, which essentially would allow associations to be able to easily apply for and obtain a license under the licensing program so they could establish this kind of program. Now, they would have to have a license, but it would...
Well, that was my question. I mean, do you see a point for the bill? I mean, you've already converted the bill one time here. Converting the bill where it gave you the discretionary authority, similar to what we did this morning with another agency relative to the 401 issue on clean water. And that would be you would have the right then to waive out and allow then the HQA process to occur. Does that sound like something that would be workable? Because we are facing a problem, and that is adequate farm labor. But at the same time, there's a real sensitivity in this state to the fact that we will provide, you know, quality conditions for the guest workers who come here.
Mr. Chairman, we'd be certainly happy to work with both sides to try to flesh that issue out. I really haven't thought about it, but I'd certainly be glad to work with both sides to try to flesh it out.
Michael, would you go ahead and give a response to that? What is your thought about the idea that basically the lawyer would be able to come in and say, okay, we've examined the conditions you intend to establish, we've looked at your agreements, we're willing to do that and allow you to operate under this program?
Mr. Chair, we wouldn't favor that kind of arrangement, partly because one of our key concerns in this area is that, as we understand from other advocates around the country, the way that the HQA program is working in other parts of the country is that much of the recruitment of H2A foreign workers occurs in Mexico. Because H2A workers are exempted from the Federal Contractor Act, those workers have no right under any contractor registration statute if Oregon statute doesn't apply. Those contractors are kind of like the Wild West was here 20 years ago. And we would be very concerned about any kind of provision that would allow even well-meaning growers to turn to those contracting organizations to contract workers in Mexico, where they would be sending workers into this state to do work on the state based on representations made on behalf of growers in this state, but would be completely beyond any reach of our regulation. We'd be very welcome to see that.
Alvarado, does the Mexican government have any process in which they analyze the validity of those who come and solicit workers in Mexico?
They're working on that right now because of these Senators Wyden and Smith proposals. We are reviewing the process.
Right, but at this point there isn't anything in place.
Well, I'm not quite sure, but we could try to investigate at the Mexican government, at the Mexican Secretary of Labor.
Mr. Chair, the way it operates is when a certificate of labor is achieved, meaning you've said you've needed 100 workers and domestic recruitment has occurred, you've got 80 workers in, you needed 20, then 20 job orders come up, and the workers in Mexico go to the consulate office, and that's where they pick up the form. And what they pick up is not just going for the form, but they get processed. It costs, I think, $100 to process. But at that point, it's a positive recruitment at that point, complete with terms and conditions of employment and where they're going to go. So it is not a nebulous thing out there where there's no protections. And they come up here, and if, in fact, once they come up here, they discover that it's not what they were given, this big envelope that's got everything in it, it's just right back to where we are with all our rules around here. Somebody did something wrong. I'm sure all the advocates will know where all these people are, what camp, because you're required to have housing, and that they go and just make the visitations they normally do to most farm workers. If there's problems, they're going to crop up, and we're not saying that we're trying to make it so they can't get at the workers. We're just saying we don't need a duplicate set of laws to do the same thing. And program's gone on a long time. I'm not aware of any NAFTA issues at all. And as far as I know on the national level, that in the H2A program, it is not surfaced because the H2A program actually pays higher.
Mr. Chair, Michael Dale, in the spirit of Oprah-like friendly dialogue, if I might respond to a couple points that Mr. Sure. Nelson's made, I'm not asserting that the H2A program itself violates NAFTA. What would violate NAFTA would be for Oregon to provide some protections for its own workers or other U.S. workers, but not provide those same protections for Mexican workers. Now, the only way Mexican workers can legally work in the United States at present, if they're not lawful permanent residents, would be under an H2A contract, and we're saying that Oregon's law would not apply to them. That's discrimination against Mexican workers in favor of local workers, and I believe that violates the NAFTA site agreement. It is that that would violate it, not the H2A program itself. The second question I wanted to respond to is, our law requires recruitment disclosure at the time of recruitment or hiring, whichever occurs first. We went through this last week. And it, one of the important things to a worker is that you know what the deal is going to be at the time you recruit it. I represent workers currently who were recruited in their hometown, left good jobs, and did not discover until they arrived at the consulate what the real deal was going to be, and would never have left home but for the fact that different representations were made by the Mexican recruiter. I mean, people don't arrive to the consulate on their own. They're recruited by foreign labor contractors operating on behalf of the employer association here in the United States. And those contractors ought to be bound by the same duties as any other foreign labor contractor to tell the truth and to tell it in writing and to tell it at a time that the worker needs to know before they quit the job, before they borrow money at usurious rates, which is what happened, in order to pay the costs that he referred to in order to get up here, and where by that time they really had no choice but to go on and come on up here, even though it was a far different deal than what had been explained to them in their hometown. And Oregon law would not permit that. Oregon law would not permit that, and there's no reason, no good sound policy reason to eliminate that requirement. Federal law would not apply to that situation.
Question is, does the federal H-2A process, would it prohibit us from saying, well, in addition to these things that must be provided, the state of Oregon requires the following, which would be equal to the standards that every other worker in the state would be doing. Does anyone have an answer to that?
Mr. Chair, not only does the federal law permit that, it requires that. It specifically requires the employer to meet federal standards and any other state standards that are higher. So, for example, under the current program, you have to pay either minimum wage, the prevailing wage, and the adverse effect wage rate. I won't bother you with what the other two are, but the minimum wage you have to pay if they come to Oregon is you have to pay the Oregon minimum wage, not the federal minimum wage, because, of course, it's higher.
Well, now, we were told $7.32 per hour.
That's the adverse effective wage rate, which is what under H-2A you have to pay, and that's set by the federal government.
A good program.
Senator Shannon.
Good program. And then at this testimony from Michael Dale, the last sentence, besides we urge you to oppose it, says, in any event, the national experience with the H-2A program, even under the existing law, has been a sad story. And you think that what we're doing today will either make that worse?
Senator Shannon, Mr. Chair, that's exactly right. It will remove a significant tool that we'd have in Oregon, either as private warriors enforcing the rights of individual workers, more importantly, that BOLI have in order to be able to regulate. If this bill is passed today, or if this bill is passed by the legislature, it would remove BOLI's enforcement authority and regulatory authority in this area.
If it's signed by the governor.
If it is enacted into law.
Well, I'm going to tell you where I am on this thing, and then since we're at a work session, you all can respond to this. I think we're ahead of the curve. What I would like to see happen is during the period of time that we have in the interim to have this addressed back to this committee again, and to have fully work on the idea of what could happen to integrate the two programs, make it easier that a provider would not be subjected to just a multitude of paperwork. And then also possibly what we can be looking forward to is have some clarification, you know, from our senators as to what the federal government intends to do with the program. And so any further comments? That's right. Well, yeah,
you missed that discussion.
I just want to shift along the last one. Now, maybe some
would have made Oak Fork blush.
Passport to address. Okay. If I could ask all of you, if you could get speak, you know, with the governor relative to the idea, we want to make sure we maintain all of the tremendous good neighbor relationships that we have. And at the same time, we all recognize within the industry that there is a need, you know, for labor exchange. It's a great program for Mexico, too, in the sense that, my goodness sakes, when you look at that kind of wages and that could be provided to folks like a lot of these workers that I know who take the profit that they make here and it keeps their farming operations or their families and businesses alive in Mexico. So I think we have a joint interest in making this process work. And I thank you all so much. It was very pleasurable to be able to do this.
Thank you, sir.
Yes.
I just want to note for the record that there isn't universal agreement that there is a labor shortage in Oregon. I've spent I don't know how many meetings with Ron Wyden talking about this. I've been in a room full of every advocate for farm workers in the state talking to Ron Wyden about this. So there is not universal consensus. There is documentation from the federal government demonstrating that, in fact, we do not have a labor shortage. I know that the growers feel that there is one, but there clearly is not evidence. What there is clear evidence of is that we have unemployment rates in double digits in something like, how many counties in the state?
I have one in,
you're a great statistician. It's something like 20 of the 36 counties. We got double-digit unemployment. That's a labor shortage? I don't think so. You know, so we shouldn't just sort of accept the notion that somehow, you know, I'm an anti-NAFTA person anyway, so you know that. But, you know, the fact of the matter is I think that anybody making an assumption that we have a labor shortage in the state should go over and talk to some of the people over there. Now, whether we should move the farms over there is another question.
Well, this has been a record committee for us to work towards the open or work session and do nothing with any of them. But I'm going to tell you, I think it was very beneficial that we did this. I appreciate the balance here. And obviously, this debate will continue. Is there any further business to come before the committee? All right, what I'm going to do is close the work session on Senate Bill 1267. If there is no further business, we'll be adjourned.